This April, the small nonprofit is being sponsored by Troy Mailing. That's T-R-O-I Mailing. Friends, I've personally been using Troy's printing and mailing services for almost 5 years now. I choose them for my clients, and I chose them when I was in-house. They are great to work with, always get my brand colors right, are cost-effective, and get my mailouts to my donors on time, even during busy seasons. Call 1-866-876-4624 for a free $100 postage credit when you use promo code DONORDM1 on your next campaign. Thank you, Troy Mailing, for sponsoring the small nonprofit.
Welcome to the Small Nonprofit Podcast with down-to-earth practical advice on how to get things done in your small organization. You are going to change the world and we can help. Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Small Nonprofit this week. I'm your host, Cindy Wagman, and I'm joined by my co-host, Anya McGlynn.
Hi, everyone.
So we're really excited to have today's guest, Chris Holtz, talk about government relations, which can be a huge blind spot for organizations of every size.
Absolutely. And for most of our listeners who are, you know, on the smaller side, you might not necessarily have a great deal of government funding. So this might be a good introductory episode to think about how you can go about building relationships with decision makers at various levels of government and hopefully unlock some of that. Mm-hmm.
And certainly if you're a larger organization or a small one that has government funding, this is crucial. We've seen a lot of organizations in Ontario, specifically over the last few months, find some of their core funding at risk because of government changes. And so you never want to be in a position where your organization can shut down because of a new government strategy. It's incredibly risky.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I think, you know, Chris's point around building relationships and, you know, really looking at party platforms and budgets, like, is he just gives some really practical tips for how to decipher the information that the government is providing you in order to help you access new pots of funding. So it's really helpful.
Exactly. And it definitely helps set you up to think about government funding in a new way, hopefully in a way that can be proactive. Understanding that, as Anya said, like, these are relationships, you're talking to other people, you're working with other people. And if you can understand their needs and translate what you do to fit their needs, you're going to be in a really strong position for your organization to grow. Christopher Holtz is a seasoned public affairs executive with over 15 years of experience working with government decision makers and clients across pretty much any public policy area you can think of. Chris has recently ranked as one of the top 10 lobbyists at Queen's Park, according to Queen's Park Briefing, a Toronto Star Intelligence Unit publication. Please join me in welcoming Chris.
Thanks for having me, Cindy.
It's such a pleasure. I feel like this is a topic we haven't touched on yet, and it's really important for organizations. I see over and over organizations not really have a government relations strategy, which I know is when they fall in, they sort of pick up the phone in crisis calling you to help them manage when things are changing at the government level, which we're going to talk about. But I really want to talk about the foundations of government relations. How do organizations build into their practice what relationships they should have with government agencies and how to develop those so that hopefully they can avoid calling you, they can avoid the crisis? Where do they start?
That's a great question, Cindy. I'll start by saying, you know, whether you're a small nonprofit or a charitable organization or the biggest bank in Canada, the reality is this is a common issue in the sense that these things happen, issues happen, and you know, that call that sometimes we get here. It doesn't matter if you're a big CEO or the leader of a small but very important organization. It happens to everybody. Mm-hmm. The biggest thing I would say is, let's keep it simple. look where the money comes from. So meaning if you're a small organization and you rely on funding from, let's say, a particular department or ministry or city agency, you need to think about where that funding is and how you as an organization sort of deal with that that funder. So what I mean then, if I take that to another level, is that, you know, we need to be mindful of where our funding sources are from. If it's from government agencies, we need to have some kind of relationship or value proposition, getting to know some of the decision makers in that organization, both public service and political people, so that hopefully over time, there's like a bit of an early warning system, or at a minimum, there's at least like a value proposition that as an organization we have that we can, you know, we can engage in that kind of discussion. But sometimes that doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. And that's why sometimes we get that phone call and we need to create that fairly quickly.
Absolutely.
But that happens a lot, whether, you know, you're a big multinational or whether you're an important NGO, it happens all the time.
That is so true. It happens to everyone. And I think from the organizations I've worked with in the past, like you mentioned, look where the money comes from and get to know those people and the decision makers and the bureaucrats who are doing that work on a day-to-day basis, as well as the politicians. But I think a lot of organizations feel like there's a sort of barrier there. Like the people who are working in those positions are not necessarily our allies. And I don't think that's true. Can you talk a little bit about how we can look at them as partners in our work?
Sure. So it's a good, I think you're 100% right that sometimes they do come across as a barrier or a blocker, mm-hmm. when in fact they may very well be allies. And I think that that's pretty common, again, for whether you're a large corporation or whether you're a leader of a charitable organization. So I think, you know, so it's not just about relationships. It's also about like paying attention to where things are going, like how policy is evolving, how, you know, what is the intentions of the government, you know, what's the budget cycle, all that, you know, gobbledygook. But it's important to have a sense about, you know, where things are going and keeping an eye on it. And, you know, forming that relationship, it's not like a one-time, you know, meeting or, you know, having an event and, you know, political people come or having meetings with officials to deal with another issue that's not maybe directly related to you as an organization, but it helps to form a relationship with decision makers. It's a whole combination of things. It's your public communications, it's your purpose as an organization and how that fits into to broader issues. It's partly promoting yourself or promoting your organization or the successes of your organization. So it's at the highest level, it's a sales job, mm-hmm. but it's an important one because it does form those relationships and it does demonstrate purpose so that when folks are making decisions, you're top of mind or that you are in the mix of decision making. And sometimes as a practice over the long term, like as a permanent practice, it's very, very helpful. Often it doesn't exist. And so it has to be created. And there's ways to do that too. But the best insurance policy, if there is one, is to have that as a permanent practice.
Yeah.
Make it part of what you do and how you do, you know, deliver the service to your clients or your certainly clients. But it's necessary. So,
fantastic. Can you, I'd love to hear an example or can you walk us through a healthy government relations strategy for an organization that you would have worked with or that you know of? Of course, you don't need to name names, but help us picture what that can look like on a day-to-day, long-term basis.
So I'm just thinking, because I've been doing this for, 19 years. You know, there's a lot of stuff. So I'm going to give you a hypothetical, and then maybe I'll give you like a real one.
Perfect.
So a hypothetical one would be an organization is a social service agency. They have clients that they help. for, you know, that's directly related to their cause. Part of it is, you know, the statistics and the impacts that the organization's making and sharing that information with government funders in a way that's useful to them. It would also be, you know, like we, all NGOs, all charitable organizations have some kind of geographic presence. Mm-hmm. So, you know, being mindful of like, who are your representatives, you know, at the municipal, provincial or federal level, depends on where your funding sources are, because yeah. wherever your funding is, that's probably your priority. So looking at those political people and their staff to have like some kind of relationship whereby, you know, you can share the successes of the organization. You can invite them to events, maybe an AGM, if those are good, or some other kind of a public event where they have the opportunity to speak about the success of the organization and its purpose. And it would be the same with public servants, too. Sometimes there are challenges because public servants are not always available. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you have to go to them and share that information. Okay. But I think there's a combination of things that sustained over time help mm-hmm. to build the relationship of the organization with decision makers and demonstrate its value. A relationship for relationship's sake is has no purpose. Mm-hmm. It's sort of linked to the fact that there is a value proposition. We help people get jobs. We support seniors. We, you know, support children, whatever the purpose might be. It's sustained over time is helpful. The only other way I would describe this or say would be, media relations. And what I mean by that is generating coverage for the organization that is around its purpose and its successes would be another way to do that. And actually it does help. Mm. So that would be another way where it has an impact on government relations for sure. So those two ways combined for the long term.
Yeah. One of the things you've been sort of mentioning both outright and in the context of the overall conversation is this idea that you kind of have to know and understand what's going on with the government mm-hmm. priorities, with policy, whether that's how you frame and articulate the work you're doing in a way where a public servant can understand and be your champion because you're helping them meet their goals, or having your pulse on what's coming down the pipeline in terms of, policy or political agenda, like understanding what your audience wants to know and what their priorities are, I think sounds like from what you're saying is really important to doing this right and to having an really effective use of your time in doing this work. Can you tell me a little bit more about like really granular, where can people find that information? Because, you know, of course there's media. There are, that's sort of the high level and obviously some of the more newsworthy things that aren't always relevant to smaller organizations. How do we find out what the government and the policy decision makers are prioritizing and thinking about?
So that's a great question. So, you know, let me just start by knowing your audience, like for all kinds of other things in life. Knowing your audience is important. It'll certainly increase your level of success. Same with government decision makers, of course. Mm-hmm. So the Google machine is helpful, but then the Google machine is filled with noise. So if I were to start, I mean, of course, there's news and there's media and et cetera. I think, candidly, you know, if we're talking about government and we're talking about whatever level of government, trying to understand what the political philosophy is of the organization is helpful. Mm-hmm. Like meaning if it's a conservative government or a liberal government or an NDP government, there is a political philosophy that is, you know, succinct that you can describe. Mm-hmm. And that's going to permeate a lot of the decision making. It doesn't mean that conservatives don't care about small children. And it doesn't mean that liberals are not fiscally responsible. And it doesn't mean that the NDP are solely socialists. I'm just using, you know, buzzwords. Because none of that, it's not as simple as that, of course. But I mean, that helps just to understand that. Where do you go to get that information, though? Like, you know, how does that describe it in more detail? Most governments or political parties have a platform of some type during the election campaign. Mm-hmm. That is a very clear indicator of what the government intends to do. There's a lot of stuff in there that they don't ever do. That's a joke, but it's also true. more formally, you know, the speech from the throne in Ottawa and also here in Ontario or the other provinces is a useful tool to see what the government's agenda is. It's described in language. They identify priorities. And that's another way of getting a sense of where the government is going. A third way, and perhaps maybe the most useful way, is the budget speech and the budget exercise, which is what every government must go through on an annual basis. Mm-hmm. The budget speech and the budget documents very clearly articulate the intentions of the government with respect to just about any policy area you can think of. That is perhaps the best tool to figure out where things are going, what the philosophy is of the government, how you might fit or don't fit, and what you might need to change or what you might need to strengthen. Mm-hmm. You know, speeches by the minister that's responsible for your area, or let's say the mayor if it's a city or municipal issue. So those are sources. Media is also helpful, but it's there's a lot of noise in that. But if you take the time, and it's important to take the time, because getting the message totally wrong, obviously, it guarantees failure.
Yeah.
So spending the time to get a sense of where things are going and how you fit is time well spent, and mm-hmm. it takes some time. So like, don't spend 30 minutes doing it. Spend several hours figuring that out, and reading and rereading, and to see how you fit. Right. I mean, some of the words are vague and purposely so. Some of them are very crystal clear. So you need to get a sense of how you fit and where the room is for government to move. Mm-hmm. Or what will be necessary to compel them to move or to stop them from moving. There you go.
What information, if any, will the public servants share with you? Say you are successful in building a relationship. How can we look at them as partners in this, and how do we use them as a source for that kind of information so that we can be more successful in our, whatever our asks might be?
Well, it's a good question. So it's everything from very open to as closed mouthed as a Russian spy. Mm-hmm. So what I mean by that is, you know, your relationship builds a level of comfort and rapport with folks where they're more willing to share information. We're not talking about state secrets. All we're talking about is, you know, sort of some of the challenges or the options they're considering, and even they may very well be asking for input to say, you know, what do you think about this versus that as a consideration. So building that relationship with those decision makers hopefully is a bit of a conduit. As to the kinds of information or ideas that they'll share, it really depends on what it is. Like, they will, you know, public servants and political people have obligations around levels of secrecy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for example, you generally are not going to get a phone call, you know, 2 weeks in advance to say, we're giving you $100 million in the budget, in the middle of May. That tends to not happen. For a variety of reasons. Okay. We don't need to get into all that stuff. But what I would say is you could expect some level of communication and some level of information. Usually when you're sitting down to meet with decision makers, there's usually material. And that gives you a sense about how folks are for either portraying some of the challenges or portraying the options, mm-hmm. Or taking options on and off the table. Because if it's not in there, clearly they're not considering this. So there's lots of ways. One thing I think that everybody can expect is while your expectations for information are going to be high, the results of what you're actually going to be getting are very, very low. And so the art of it is being able to understand language that is vague.
Mm-hmm.
When you can understand the purpose of why it's vague and where it may or may not be going, you can be quite successful. But you need to really be able to understand the power of vagueness, the fog of confusion. No, I'm just teasing. there you go. But that's the truth.
Yeah.
Government speak. Yeah, government speak is designed for a reason. Mm-hmm. It's designed for flexibility,
yeah,
or it's designed for total clarity. Mm-hmm. Fundamentally different forces, often in the same document. Mm-hmm. There's a reason.
Stop the podcast.
Hey, everyone. It's your host, Cindy Wagman, and Anya McGlynn.
Hi. We just need to interject for a second.
Really important information that we want to make sure you listen to and hear. This podcast is brought to you in partnership between us, The Good Partnership, and Charity Village. And we want to make sure you know that there is a wealth of information waiting for you at both of our websites.
That's right. On Charity Village, you can find a really robust knowledge center, as well as a fantastic job board, whether you're looking for short-term, long-term employment, or volunteer opportunities.
So for that, you can visit charityvillage.com. And of course, on The Good Partnership, we have lots of resources specifically around fundraising.
That's right. There are fundraising plans. There are fundraising strategy guides. There are, of course, all the past episodes of this podcast. So if you're looking for specific advice and tools and tips on fundraising, check out thegoodpartnership.com.
And especially if you don't know where to start, I love our brand new fundraising guide. It outlines all the different fundraising strategies there are out there and gives you some information to help you evaluate which ones are right for you. So for that, thegoodpartnership.com/guide. Happy fundraising.
On with the podcast.
Fantastic. So yes, being good at deciphering all those messages and then again, positioning your organization and its impact within those is obviously the biggest thing that you can do right. But let's say, as I think was the case with most of the people who are calling you, that you've kind of neglected this area of work and you find yourself in a situation or the organization finds themselves in the situation where they're dealing with a crisis. What does a crisis, a government relations crisis, look like for organizations, and how can they move forward with that?
So, first of all, crisis could be everything from the threat of funding cuts to front page news in the Globe and Mail.
Mm-hmm.
I've dealt with both, and sometimes have created both. Mm-hmm. A crisis sometimes is also a useful tool if you're a lobbyist or a government relations person.
Mm.
But from the context of what a charity or nonprofit organization is dealing with, the most common thing would probably be a change in government policy around that will have an impact on funding.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens a lot. It tends to be that it's not imminent, but it's a serious doubt and cloud, and usually it's the kind of thing that could be a month to 3 months away from happening. And the statements that the government might make are reasonably blunt, and so everyone's on notice. So what happens in that kind of situation? Well, first of all, is getting a sense of where the government is coming from and what their purpose is.
Mm.
Often, if it's funding, it is because there's some kind of fiscal problem, which Ontario, if we're talking about Ontario, lots of other provinces too, mm-hmm. Is a common issue. We've had a lot of fiscal problems. Get used to it. So that is something that is going to be pretty common. It also means that we need to be mindful of what the government is proposing to do in other areas.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you deal with it? So one is understanding where it's coming from, understanding its purpose, and now building the case about why you should be treated differently, either you or like-minded groups like you. And that can be everything from mobilizing clients, family members of clients, let's say it's a social service agency. It might be an assessment of doing media timed at an appropriate point to start to build a public case for why the government should not do this or do this in a particular way. It could be a whole host of things. But what will come obvious is a couple things. One is, why are they doing it? What is the time frame that they're proposing to do it? What do we have as existing resources and infrastructure? What I mean by infrastructure is, what do we have in place from a government relations perspective? Do we have anything? We got nothing. And then it's building the strongest possible strategy and tactical plan to deal with, you know, what is coming. And it happens all the time, for every industry I've ever been involved with. It is those are the concepts, and they're often the same.
Fantastic.
I will say it one more way. So this week, without getting into too much detail, we had a front page challenge issue. And a front page challenge issue is something that is on the front page or will be on the front page, you know, within hours. And so it is both a government relations issue and a communications issue. And what that requires is, first of all, an enormous amount of time, which doesn't exist, but also a clear sense about what is possible to try and reduce this or drive it or change it or stop it, none of which are guaranteed. And the government relations component of that is directly related, meaning at what point do you engage government? At what point do you stop engaging government? Do you try and solve the problem and go to government to say, we're doing this, to let them know how you're solving it? How do you create strength out of a crisis? Sometimes you can, sometimes it's impossible. So those NGOs and charitable organizations have also experienced this. I've seen it. I've done it. So it's, you know, it's in those situations, some organizations do have the people and capacity to be able to do this. Some don't. The truth of the matter is the time is so limited that hopefully their board members or staff or whatever in place that can respond to that stuff in a way that makes sense, as appropriate, and strengthens the organization at the end of it.
Yeah, like rally together.
Yeah, for sure, right? Like the last thing any entity should want is, if there is a front page challenge, you know, is to spin wheels and to start doing things without knowing, without really seeing what the greater strategy is, because that's just like rope around the neck. And that may lead to things that are far worse.
Excellent. So I see sort of two examples in my mind of this type of front page funding crisis or policy change crisis, I should say. Where I see people trying to mobilize their communities, trying to sway public opinion and push against the policy changes. But then I also see this idea of actually reframing and looking at how you can fit within the policy changes.
Exactly.
Okay. And I guess the question is, you know, figuring out which is right given the situation and individual circumstances. Is that fair?
That's 100% fair. It's like you've done this before there, Cindy. You're exactly right. Like it is, it's an assessment of, you know, what is possible. So like you also, you know, I mean, there's all kinds of combinations to this that make it so like we could spend hours and hours, but don't. But what I would say is it really does depend. Like a government at the beginning of its mandate with a clear objective, you know, you could stand on the and build the biggest campaign possible to stop something and you'll be crushed. So what was the point? You know, it doesn't mean maybe it is worth doing because maybe it can be stopped or maybe, you know, or whatever. Another approach clearly is to see where the government is going, step out of the way and change or try to help them refocus so that, you know, we can continue to do what we do, but maybe in a slightly different way.
Yeah.
Also very effective. Mm-hmm. How do you assess which one to go with? It depends on a whole heap of details. Timing, electoral cycle, success of the government, you know, opinion polling, you know, strength of the organization, your level of media relations, whether or the change is so critical, or like, so for example, like a change in the way that funding rolls out, I don't know if that's a do or die type issue. It probably would be more like, okay, we can do this. However, we should consider, you know, including these kinds of variables for like an RFP or something. Or we should do this, but you should sort of structure that just for new projects rather than existing funds. I'm just making this up. But like, there's all kinds of ways to adjust or help the government to reframe, or to reframe the organization so that we fit into their vision.
Mm-hmm.
But just as much, there is also sometimes where the issue is we need to stop it. And so we need to design a campaign that motivates the government to say, you know what, we'll change our mind.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be effective too. Like we've done it, but it's hard work. Like it's not like you know, you design it and implement it and it's done in one day. It could be months. It could be, you know, maybe a year and a half. It's not for the faint of heart. It's for several hearts, because it takes more than one person.
Yeah. Yeah. Fantastic. So all of this is to say, we hope organizations aren't facing these kind of crises, but when you do, obviously looking at how to taking a step back and evaluating before you take action, and really understanding which path is going to get you to what end, because there are definitely different outcomes. What's at stake if you just ignore government relations as part of your organization's work?
You're unknown. You are unknown, and you are subject to the whims of the decisions of decision makers, public servants, and political people. And you lose control. It's not to say that even if you have all that in place that you have any control,
mm-hmm.
but you certainly have a lot less when nobody knows you, and nobody understands your organization, and and it's not about being big or small. There are a lot of small organizations that have huge impact mm-hmm. and great strength because political decision makers and public servants are champions of these organizations. It's incredible. And there are also large organizations that fail at this. So it's not about size, but it is about thinking.
Yeah.
So what's at stake? Potentially everything is at stake.
Yeah.
So the advice would be like, it's not to say that, you know, we need to be mindful of it and also of what the resources are, but it's worth doing. If we have a purpose, which is to help people and our clients and our family members, and whether it's seniors or youth or adults or whatever program, it obviously has value. Otherwise, we wouldn't be doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to tell the world what it is that we're doing, demonstrate its value, and demonstrate it to those that are funders. Because government is such a funder, often.
It's huge, especially in Canada.
Exactly. Especially yeah. Canada, for a variety of reasons that you and I know.
Mm-hmm.
But because of that, we must tell them. We must tell them so they understand it, appreciate it, and support it. We can't just assume that it'll come again next year. That's dumb. Don't do it.
Don't do it. Well, it is very easy for organizations to rely on government funding. We see that all over the place because they haven't had to think about it for a very long time. So, with fluctuations in government, I think most organizations haven't been that affected. But you never know. And it's, you know, from a risk perspective, it's really important to get, as you said, our work is so valuable. We have to make sure that we're doing the things to protect it and to look at the government as, you know, someone who can treat them how we treat our other funders, right?
That's exactly right. Yeah. Like, and it's also, you know, governments have a right. I mean, governments are us. Like, yeah. We elect these things. We may not elect specific people, but, you know, governments represent people. Mm-hmm. So people who are helping people. My simple point is, yeah, I of course, you're 100% right. And it's also, you know, they have a right. I mean, governments ought to look at stuff to see, you know, can we do things better?
That's their mandate, right?
That's their mandate. It's entirely appropriate. You know, we may disagree with it. And then it's up to us, if we disagree, to build the case for them to say, you know what, you're right. Or we should do this differently, mm-hmm. or we should support this more than we were thinking before, or whatever. But it's up to us, and there's nothing. If the government is funding this, that's a good thing. We need to share with them the value of what it is that they're doing, right? Public servants and political people. We're an extension of society as mm-hmm. NGOs and charitable organizations. Government is also representative of society. We work together.
Yeah.
And that's even the meanest, most tight-fisted government versus the one that is, has bales of cash that they borrow from foreign markets. It's a joke. Doesn't matter which. That's incumbent on us to do that. And lots of organizations, charitable organizations, do this.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, Chris, you've given everyone a lot to not only think about, but to take action on, which I really appreciate. Where can people learn more about you and your work?
So, of course, we have a fabulous website. Our firm is Campbell Strategies. So Campbell, like the soup, strategies, plural, because there's always more than one, .com. Also, we did a campaign a few years ago, which got a lot of media attention, which we did pro bono for the victims of thalidomide in Canada. The Globe and Mail, in particular, did a series over about a year and a half, which they actually won the Michener Award for journalism for it. But, you know, we probably broke a record in that usually having front page news is not good. But for the purposes of our campaign, it was critical.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we had like 10 front page covers of the Globe and Mail, which is ridiculous.
Wow.
The reason why I say that is there's a lot of stuff about that campaign, which is publicly available. It's online. It was everything from a unanimous vote in the House of Commons, which is almost unheard of.
Yeah.
Up in Ottawa, you know, consensus on anything never happens. On this issue, it did happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then ultimately a funding program of like $180 million for, at the time, it was about 97 people. It was it's a thing that we're probably the most proud of mm-hmm. as a firm. Mm-hmm. It'll be the most meaningful work that we probably do in our careers. It's still an ongoing issue, mm-hmm. but, that's something about, you know, us as a firm. There's a lot of stuff on our website, but, that's how you can find us.
Excellent. You know, now you're going to get a lot of calls for pro bono work, but
yeah. So let me just say,
just an example of a campaign that you're really proud of.
Pro
bono work to all of our listeners.
Yeah. And I would say this truthfully, and I do mean this. Even folks in our industry, we all do some pro bono work from time to time. And it's because, you know, we're all human beings. We all care. And even the cold-hearted lobbyists care. Mm-hmm. That's a joke. But we do. So all to say that, you know, whether it's us or any other firm, a lot of folks will donate a little bit of time and to try and help support an organization. We're all on boards of charitable organizations, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's pretty common. So,
excellent.
Yeah, there you go.
Amazing. And just to tap into that, like in your board recruitment, if this is an issue that you anticipate, definitely look for someone who has, you know, government relations or, you know, a background in lobbying that can help you, because to have that on your board is an incredible skill set when you are entering uncertain political times. So great tip.
The one thing I'll say to that is it doesn't matter if the person's a liberal or a conservative or an NDP person. It's more the mindset and the strategy. So, you know, some boards you ought to recruit people because of relationships, mm-hmm. but you also need to recruit people because of skill sets. So what I would say is it doesn't matter if the person's like a Tory lobbyist or a liberal lobbyist or a dipper, NDP person. It doesn't matter. What matters is that they have the skill sets that can support that organization. Yeah. Because at the end of the day, it is the same. Like we all showed up.
Right? Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, some of my best friends are socialists. Let's do it.
Chris, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. And I know our listeners will get a lot out of this conversation. So thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Well, folks, that's it for today's episode of The Small Nonprofit. I'm your host, Cindy Wagman, and this show is brought to you by The Good Partnership. As a reminder, if you want more resources around raising more money for your small nonprofit, visit thegoodpartnership.com and download our free fundraising strategy guide. I'll see you next week.